Good morning, and welcome to the Prescott Daily Courier. This is your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Babs Felix, in Flagstaff. Today, I'll be reading articles dated March 5th, 2025. Here are your headlines for today. PUSD approves proposed 2025-26 budget with 2.5% all employee salary wage increase. Dry conditions could lead to more public safety power shutoffs in 2025. And court removes 15-week time limit for abortions. And here are your details. PUSD approves proposed 2025-26 budget with 2.5% all employee salary wage increase by Nancy Hudson. In a unanimous vote, the Prescott Unified School District Governing Board voted on a proposed $33.4 million operations budget for the 2025-26 school year, a financial package that will ensure all employees receive a 2.5% salary or wage increase. District administrators say that the pay hike essentially represents the cost of inflation, and with a 5% increase in health costs, will likely enable their staff to break even rather than increase their buying power. Board members, though, wanted to recognize how much the community values their day-to-day efforts and offer at least some financial incentive, given Prescott is among the lowest funded communities in a state that is one of the lowest funded in the nation. With kudos to district leadership in particular, Chief Financial Officer Brian Moore, the board said this budget clearly represents a lot of careful thought and consideration about how to reward faculty and staff for their yeoman efforts to educate students, delivering high-quality programs with appropriate class sizes. The expected increase to the district's now $32.6 million budget equates to about $771,000 in additional spending for the coming year, what board members and district leaders deem a nominal increase given what the district is still able to provide for the academic, athletic, and social enrichment of some 3,900 students. This projected budget balances rising costs in certain areas, including salaries, against some staff restructuring and rethinking about how to offer non-academic services, such as marketing. Against the backdrop of some criticism about the district's marketing initiatives, the district will not replace its former marketing communications position and instead will divvy up some of those duties to existing staff. That move will save about $40,000. The district, too, will be reducing or consolidating some staff positions, including the reduction of one Prescott High teacher through attrition. Those restructuring moves total a savings of about $339,000. For the first time in many years, the district has experienced a drop of just over 90 students, and so the district is budgeting for about 45 less students. Student enrollment, or what is known as average daily membership, is how the state calculates the per pupil expenditures that fund the district's budget. With the unanimous approval of this proposed budget, Assistant Superintendent for Human Resources Andy Binder said he will be issuing contracts for next year. The state regulations prohibit sending out contracts to teachers before March 24th. Once those are returned 2 weeks later, the district will have a better sense of positions that they need to fill for next year and can begin the competitive task of finding suitable candidates. APS reports dry conditions could lead to more public safety power shutoffs in 2025. By Cindy Barks. In the midst of this winter's record dryness and record heat, Arizona Public Service is working to get the word out to the community that precautionary power shutoffs are more likely to occur. During a presentation on wildfire mitigation to the Yavapai County Board of Supervisors on Wednesday, March the 5th, Frank Sanderson, Northern Division Director of Arizona Public Service, APS, reported that the utility company uses a variety of methods and programs to help lessen the risk of wildfire. Among those methods are two programs that Sanderson said could have impacts on APS customers during wildfire season. One is the non-reclosing strategy, which Sanderson said could result in longer power outages that are caused by storms. He explained that customers might normally experience the electricity going off briefly during a thunderstorm and then coming on back on a minute later. Under the non-reclosing strategy, he said, we disable that reclosing option. So if the power goes out, we send our personnel out into the field to visually check the equipment before we close back into it. Sanderson added, one thing we want our customers and community to know is they may see lengthened outages because of that. He attributed that to the time difference of having a timer reach a minute and then restoring power versus sending somebody in a truck out there to make sure everything is okay. Another of APS's safety measures is the Public Safety Power Shutoff, or PSPS program, which Sanderson said is one of the tools available for wildfire mitigation. While PSPS is the tool of last resort, Sanderson said this year's weather conditions could make it more likely. As you know, this year, with record dryness and the record heat, the fuels definitely are present at a heightened risk, he said. In past years, we have not had to deal with that as much. To help determine the need for power shutoffs, APS recently added an advanced modeling system that is able to predict 5 to 7 days in advance if a weather event that would require shutoff of power is expected. The power shutoffs would occur in a localized area for a certain amount of time to get past that weather event, patrol the line, and then bring it back into service, Sanderson said. Acknowledging that the prospect of public safety power shutoffs does bring up cause for concerns because our customers rely on power, Sanderson told the supervisors, we are very proud of our reliability record, and I want this group to know that reliability is a big deal for us at APS. But he added, the only thing that's more important than reliability is the safety of our customers and communities, and we are committed to that. To alert customers about the possibility of a pending power shutoff 5 to 7 days out, Sanderson said that APS would notify each customer within the shutoff area every day by email, phone, or text, and other ways. He said APS would work closely with the county and with Yavapai County Emergency Management to help get the word out. Court removes 15-week time limit for abortions by Howard Fisher, Phoenix. It's now official. There are no time limits in Arizona beyond which an abortion can be performed. In a brief order Wednesday, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Frank Moskowitz granted the motion by abortion providers to declare the state's current 15-week limit unconstitutional. More to the point, the judge permanently and forever blocked state officials from enforcing the law. Wednesday's order, in some ways, was not a surprise. It follows the decision of Arizona voters last November to approve Proposition 139. That measure enshrined a fundamental right to terminate pregnancy into the Arizona Constitution. Challengers brought the lawsuit against the state, but Attorney General Chris Mays, whose job includes defending state laws, agreed with the plaintiffs that the approval of the ballot measure did in fact make the law unenforceable, and no private anti-abortion group sought to intervene to defend the statute. The lawsuit is expected to be only the first in a series seeking to cite Proposition 139 to overturn a host of other abortion regulations that remain on the books. These range from a 24-hour waiting period before a woman can terminate a pregnancy and a requirement to first perform an ultrasound, to a restriction on who can perform an abortion, even one with drugs instead of surgery. Nancy Northrup, president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, said those battles are already on her agenda. Barriers to abortion access in Arizona remain, she said in a prepared statement, saying the remaining restrictions, like waiting periods, continue to undermine the voters' will. We will keep fighting to ensure that Arizonans get all the freedoms they voted for and rightfully expect. At the same time, however, Republican lawmakers are seeking to enact even more restrictions. You are listening to the Prescott Daily Courier from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home devices. Prescott Police Canine Fundraiser offered a fun night for all who attended by Deborah Winters. Aspire Sports held a fundraiser on Saturday, March the 1st, earmarked for the Prescott Police Department's PPD canine unit with approximately 85 in attendance. The preliminary amount raised is $7,500, which doesn't include those who showed up at the door and paid. The PPD canine unit is funded only through donations and grants, which makes events such as this so integral to the department. The stars of the evening were the canines and Eden. It was a fantastic event and one of the most fun fundraisers I ever did. We are already looking forward to next year, said Ann Huntington, advertising and business development for Aspire Sports. sporting smiles from ear to ear, were canine drug detection dogs Benny and Cooper, along with Eden, PPD's victim assistance dog. When not working, the canines are lovable creatures who absolutely adore human interaction, especially Eden. This event is so important because it shows how much the community supports us and how much they love our canines, said PPD Chief Amy Bonney. Bike Rodeo to be held at Park Collective on March the 15th. The Prescott Valley Police Department, PVPD, is joining with the Arizona Governor's Office of Highway Safety and Park Collective to host a free bike rodeo at Park Collective from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on March the 15th. Park Collective is located at 7450 East Pave Way, Prescott Valley, Arizona, 86314. Bikes will be provided for the rodeo. Helmets and bicycle education materials will also be given out. Any questions regarding this event can be directed to the Traffic and Safety Unit through Amy Capelli at 928-772-5162. The Prescott Police Department can be contacted at 928-772-9267 for non-emergencies and 911 for emergencies. Yavapai County Silent Witness is 1-800-932-3232. And next we'll turn to the features page, starting with To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I have found what seems like an almost magical way to stop the progression of the common cold and a cure for it. I am a reasonably healthy 84-year-old male with a medically sound lifestyle. Historically, I've gotten about 2 common colds per year that always start with nasal congestion. It rapidly progresses to a runny nose, sneezing, a sore or scratchy throat, coughing up green mucus, a low-grade fever, and a general feeling of malaise, all of which lasts for about 8 days. Recently, I have found that if I take a Claritin D, when the nasal symptoms first start, it drives me out. My nose opens up, and it never progresses into anything more than unpleasant symptoms. To any more of the unpleasant symptoms. My surmise is this. There is a causal relationship between the nasal congestion and the cold symptoms. And by eliminating the nasal congestion symptoms, I block the progression. I would appreciate your comments. Answer. Sadly, there isn't a cure for this virus. It's just a way of reducing symptoms. Americans spend a great deal on treatments to reduce symptoms from colds with variable success, but you have found a treatment that works for you. Claritin D is a combination of an antihistamine and a decongestant. The D is for decongestant, specifically pseudoephedrine. Although these help with symptoms, only your body's immune system will get rid of the virus, which takes at least a few days. 8 isn't out of the range. I do worry about giving men in their 80s a decongestant. I once sent a patient to the emergency room by prescribing him a decongestant, which affected his prostate so much that he couldn't urinate at all. His situation required a tube for a few days, and he was understandably not happy with me. It was also the last time I prescribed this drug without warning. So while I'm glad Claritin D works great for you, it doesn't work well for most people. It can also cause serious side effects in a few and doesn't make your body get rid of the virus any faster. Dear Dr. Roach, I am on a low-sodium diet by choice. I do not add salt to anything except when I bake for others. I have found that if I cut salt down or eliminate it, I can also reduce my sugar levels as well. After reading a recent article on potassium and sodium, I stopped eating sandwich meats except for tuna fish and stopped eating pizza and oatmeal from flavored packets. I also reduced my intake of fast food and restaurant meals, and I increased my potassium intake with high potassium foods. The recommended dietary allowance, or RDA, on sodium is 2,300 milligrams, while the RDA on potassium is 4,700 milligrams. These two should be in a 2-to-1 ratio, ideally. Am I correct? Answer. It is absolutely true that most North Americans consume too much sodium and too little potassium. A typical American diet consists of 3,400 milligrams of sodium and 2,500 milligrams of potassium. Most of my patients do not want to carefully monitor the potassium and sodium content of their food. Furthermore, I wouldn't say that there is a particular ratio you're looking to get, but you are quite right that there are guidelines recommending no more than 2,300 milligrams of sodium and at least 4,700 milligrams of potassium. You have made a lot of good choices. You can certainly count your potassium and sodium intake if you want, but you are looking to consume a lot more potassium than sodium. The exact amount isn't as important as choosing foods that you like that are healthy. Next, we'll turn to Dear Annie by Annie Lane. Dear Annie, I've known my friend Ella for over 50 years. In the last few years, for whatever reason, she only wants to communicate with me via texting. She has no medical or mental issues. I just saw her at her sister's funeral. I've told her that I don't wish to communicate through texting only. I keep asking her why we can't just talk on the phone like we always have. I've informed her that I don't want to type out a whole conversation when we are both holding our phones in our hands. She continues to text me only, which I refuse to do because it takes too long and, in my opinion, is impersonal. We don't communicate at all now. I asked her if she does not want to hear my voice. No answer. I know of other people who are having this same issue. Is this a thing now? Totally confused. Signed, at odds. Oh, signed, totally confused. At odds in a friendship of over 50 years. Dear at odds. It sounds like Ella has made up her mind about texting versus calling. Though frustrating, you can't force her to talk on the phone. Plenty of people prefer texting over calling for convenience, personal comfort, and even social anxiety. Your options are now to adapt to her method of communication or let the friendship fade. You can always send a message like, "I miss hearing your voice. If you ever feel like calling, I'd love to catch up," and leave the ball in her court. Dear Annie, my son, daughter-in-law, granddaughter, and soon-to-be grandson live 12 hours away. We visit 4 to 6 times a year, driving 6 hours a day for 2 days, and stay at a hotel overnight to see the family. We have been staying with my son, but now that a new baby is coming, we will need to stay in a hotel for the weekend. It seems every time we visit our daughter-in-law's mother, who lives 10 minutes away and spends every weekend with the family, shows up. Not just one day, but all 3 days that we are visiting. We don't get time to know our granddaughter because Gigi is always there taking over. How do we tell her to give us time? I'd like her to stay home and let us visit. She is over the top loud and has to be the center of attention, winding our granddaughter up. We spend 24 hours on the road to see our granddaughter, not the mother-in-law. Signed, Sad Grandparents. Dear Sad Grandparents, it's understandable to want some quality time with your granddaughter. The best way to address this is with your son. With your son is to keep the conversation focused on your relationship to your grandkids, not on pushing your mother-in-law away. That sets you up nicely for suggesting some one-on-one time or perhaps a special outing with your granddaughter. You have been listening to the Prescott Daily Courier, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, thanking you so much for listening today. And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.